This week's episode will be brought to you by Royal Blood Designs. Are you looking to start a business adventure and need a modern, stylish, and bold logo to really kickstart your brand? Do you currently have a logo or other design work that could use some revamping to bring it to the 21st century? Well, look no further than Royal Blood Designs, based in Tampa, Florida. They are your end-all, be-all with any kind of design work, from logos, business cards, and letterhead, all the way to album covers and t-shirts. And on a personal note, Royal Blood has been my personal design team for the last few years, and I must say that the customer service is absolutely excellent. They want to make sure you're completely satisfied with your product and will stop at nothing less. Take it from me, gents. Once you use this service, you will never feel the need to go anywhere else. Find them on Instagram by simply searching their name in the search bar, or head over to their Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Royal Blood Designs. And lastly, make sure you check out their t-shirt line. These are truly high-quality shirts at a price that will still leave money in your pocket. And you can find these great shirts at royalblooddesigns.spreadshirt.com. Okay, guys, enjoy the show.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's Dan here. And this week, myself and my compatriot Chris, we talk about the importance of having a productive hobby. We kind of go into the definition of what we mean by a productive hobby. We kind of talk about our own productive hobbies, what we get out of them, and kind of tips when you're starting out a new hobby, because it can be a very daunting task. So thanks for listening in, and be sure to like us on Facebook and listen on iTunes and tune in.
Welcome to the Zen of Gentlemen podcast. We're your guide to being a perfect gentleman in an imperfect age. This is your source for discovering the gentleman within you. Listen in as we share with you tips to becoming well-groomed, well-mannered, and well-trained in the lost art of virility. Let's take the journey together with your hosts, Chris and Dan.
Good day, ladies and gents. This is another episode of the Zen of Gentlemen podcast. I'm your host, Chris, along with my compatriot here, Daniel.
How's it going this fine day?
And we had a really great show last week. I hope you guys got into it a little bit. We discussed the rise and the hopefully fall of the Netflix and chill generation. So we went over some kind of tips on what to do instead, and why that whole genre or whatever. I don't even know. That's probably not the proper word, but yeah. That whole thing is just crap. So if you haven't checked it out yet, please go do. It's going to be up on our iTunes and TuneIn, and hopefully by that time Stitcher. So and also too, if you haven't reached over and grabbed a hold of us on our Facebook page, that's Zen of Gentlemen podcast. So go ahead and do that. So basically what we're going to do on this week's show is we're going to go over hobbies and why they are important. And
why it's important to have productive hobbies also.
Yeah, you can have a hobby that's just life draining from everybody else around you. So Dan's going to kind of take the lead on this one. I'm going to be the kind of more or less the follower, I think. I'm going to be asking the,
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Which way did it go, George? Which way did it go?
We're going to, like I said, we're going to go over why it's okay, why it's great to have a productive hobby, a productive passion as well. As George Carlin said it, I have lots of passions. Hobbies cost money.
isn't that the truth?
It is absolutely the truth, especially for what we do. And so, like I said, we're going to go over what kind of hobbies that Dan and I are into, and why they're important, and why they're important to us, actually, and why it's important for everybody just to pick up a hobby, whether regardless of what it is. It could be, it could cost you a lot of money, could not cost you a lot of money. I mean, it just really depends on what you want to do. So I'm going to let Dan kind of take it away here. And Dan, so what do we got going on, buddy?
I kind of want to start out with defining what I mean by a hobby, specifically a productive hobby.
Okay.
Because my father, I love him. He's a great man.
Yes.
His hobby is TV.
Yeah.
He comes home from work, sits in front of the TV.
And what does he do, like, for a job?
He does management with waste services.
Oh, so he works for waste management?
Yes. Okay. He does management. He's...
Oh, so he doesn't work for waste management, but he just works
No, he
for...
does. He works in the office.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
He's not, like, driving the trucks or gotcha. Anything
Which
like
is
that.
A terrible way to go.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
And he comes home, watches TV, eats dinner, watches TV, and goes to bed. So, to me, that's not a productive use of time. I try to personally look at it as my time is money, and as such, I want to see a return on investment. I mean, I did have a problem. I was one of those people who would be glued to my phone for hours on end, scrolling through useless amounts of nothing.
I think we're all kind of guilty of that, though.
To some extent, but I was bad.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean,
with this podcast, I find myself glued to my phone more often than I would like to. I do make it a rule, though, like to not do it when my boy's around.
Also network with it.
Yeah, like that's
so that's understandable. Me, I was just scrolling through Facebook, scrolling through, looking at funny pictures on the internet. It was nothing productive. I got no return on my investment. That's how I always
invest in
the
time too. I mean, it's not just money; it's time.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
is investing time like money. And as such, if you invest in a new venture, you want to see money come from it.
Exactly.
You want to see a return on your investment.
Just like this podcast. I mean, it'd be nice to start making some money on this. But,
yeah, it'd be nice.
But we,
like we have a lot of overhead either.
We don't. We're basically doing this in my living room. So
yes, or not. Basically, we are.
Basically, we are. So, as like you said, we always like to see a return on something that we do, especially we put a lot of our effort and a lot of our time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's time you can't get back. So you want to make sure that it's successful. And getting back to the podcast idea is, like, we know this is going to be a while.
Yeah.
You know, so we know we're not going to have we're not going to have killer shows every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to have kind of stale shows maybe once
in
a while.
And it's not like it takes up a whole huge amount of time either.
It does not.
I mean, for those listening at home, we're going to give an inside scoop on the inner workings of the Zen of Gentlemen podcast.
Basically, what we do is we set this up. I hit record, and then I process the audio, and it literally takes me about 15 minutes. To put the commercials together and put everything lining up so it's, I don't like using produced, but polished.
Mm-hmm.
And then we upload it. Like the whole process from after post edit, that whole process literally takes about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and also even we record two episodes at a time.
Yeah, we do.
So we come in, we record two episodes, and then we have a week away, and then we come back and we record two more episodes. That way we're not spending, say, one day a week every day doing
exactly,
this.
Which is what we used to do in a prior situation of ours. I know I did that when I first started we'll just say it.
Mm-hmm.
we knew we were going to get to it sooner or later.
Yeah, cat's out of the bag.
Yeah, I began a podcast called The Metalhead Offensive for those scoring at home. Some people already probably know that. It was fun. It was fun. It was a great idea. I think it kind of got taken to the extreme to the point where I wanted it to be a really logical discussion about music and heavy metal, and you know it was great having guests on, but those guests kind of, and I don't want to talk bad about them. I'm not saying all of them did it. I mean, you know, we had really great guests on. They were awesome to talk to.
Yeah.
But a lot of the people just said, "Oh my God, there's a mic in my hand. What about let's be stupid."
Yeah.
And I'm not saying all the guests did that either. It did come from other avenues in the podcast family that we were in. I was not happy with that.
And even still, I feel like this venture specifically is a productive hobby to have.
I think so.
Because, I mean,
we're doing something.
Enjoy this.
I enjoy it too. And the best part about it is it's not just, you know, with the TMO show, or the metal, that's what we just call it, we were, showcasing new bands every week, bringing more music to the masses, trying to bring their brand out, basically. And that got to be exhausting, and it got to be
A lot of work.
We kind of got used in a lot of ways.
Think of all the exposure you'll get.
Yeah, we had a lot of those. We had a lot of people just to kind of really take us for granted. I mean, we were, when TMO at its height, we were averaging over 100 downloads a day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, that's what it boiled down to. We were averaging at least 100 downloads a day. We had to pay for extra bandwidth. We had to pay for extra service. I mean, we were rocking and rolling, but we weren't making any money.
Yeah.
We were probably spending a good 30, 40 bucks a month just on bandwidth.
Yeah.
Not to mention all the equipment that we bought and all this other stuff, which unfortunately got stolen. excuse me. But, so like getting back, we kind of dove off topic there for a second. But getting back.
Not really. It kind of.
In a way.
But it's a productive hobby.
It is
what needs to be.
I think this is more informative than the other one.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely think we're in the right direction here.
Even on our end too, I find it to be better because it's essentially, when you come down to the bare bones of it, us having an educated conversation.
Exactly.
Which I feel is an incredibly good thing.
And also, too, it's not like we know all the stuff off the top of our heads. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're not perfect.
No.
So we're
don't speak for yourself.
Thanks, buddy. We're researching these topics. We're going through them. We're trying to find the best stuff that we can give to you.
Mm-hmm.
I researched the Netflix and chill thing and find out why.
So did I, and found out a lot that I didn't want to.
Exactly. I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is happening. You know, it's terrible. Excuse me. I shouldn't have ate that while during our break. So like I said, it's very important to have a productive hobby, and you might not always make money on it, but if that's the eventual goal,
mm-hmm.
and if you could be one of those lucky few that turn that hobby into an actual job, like then that's like pro league, you mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? So, that's kind of what we're hoping for with this podcast. We know it's not going to happen overnight, but it will happen.
Probably won't happen at all.
It probably won't happen at all. But if we even get to make a little bit of money on it, I'm happy.
I'd be happy if we just broke even.
Yeah, exactly. If we paid for, we got a lot of bandwidth and we're paying for that every mm-hmm. month, I'd be happy just, I'm happy seeing likes on our Facebook page from people I don't know. You know,
like, that's always really nice.
And I tried getting a post, like paying for it on Facebook. It didn't go over very well. And
yeah.
Either way, I'd be happy just seeing new likes on the Facebook page and just breaking even. Like if we could do that, I'd be perfectly
okay. I would be ecstatic.
Exactly. And it's a little things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, Dan. Go back into what you were saying.
No, it's all relevant because it's all on having a productive hobby.
And let's talk about what you do. Let's talk about what your hobby. Like when Dan's really into woodworking, he's a set builder.
Trade, I'm a set designer and scenic carpenter.
Okay. I didn't offend you by saying that.
No, not at all. Okay. For those at home who know really nothing about technical theater, which is what my career falls under the umbrella of,
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people who don't know about theater. I didn't know about theater until I started the job.
Yeah, I did. Like for doing what I do, like I didn't even know restaurants had grease traps.
Yeah. So what I do is predominantly I do theater sets. I do some web series as well. I do sets for them. But essentially what happens is I'll get contacted that someone needs a set or a set piece. I'll find out what the play is. Basically try and find a SparkNotes version of it.
Yeah.
Or
you mean like Cliff Notes? Is that what you mean? Okay.
Look up, get rough ideas and such. And from there, I'll talk to the director and I'll design what it is that they need, be it a full set. Or mm-hmm. one prop. Like for an upcoming production of Little Mermaid, I am doing Triton's Throne and Ursula's Throne.
And you show me the pictures on that. That's going to come out really
fun. That's going to come out really fun. I'm looking forward to that
one. Yeah, I can't wait to see the finish. But you better send me a picture of that.
Oh, yeah. It is going to be all over Facebook.
I hope so.
There's going to be so many pictures of me.
Oh, my God. Just sitting there and all that crap.
And from that avenue, because I absolutely love it, I absolutely love working with my hands.
I think everybody should.
No. So it's not for some people.
It's not for some people, but it's always good to be able to have that trade where mm-hmm. being handy, I guess.
Yes, it's definitely a good skill. But from that, it actually went, I wanted to make someone a cutting board for Christmas.
Yeah.
It was my girlfriend's sister and
Felicia,
her boyfriend. Yeah. And I wanted to do it with their initials in it.
Oh, that's right. I remember you showed me the rough the rough sketch of that, and I thought it was going to come out great, especially with the wood that you bought.
Yeah, it was mahogany and poplar.
Mahogany and poplar. Did you put that purple wood in there that you showed me on there, too? That was different?
That was before the Purple Heart.
Okay, gotcha.
And that really started me on it, because I had already had a lot of the tools from my scenic work,
because mm-hmm.
I have my back patio has been converted.
Yeah.
Albeit
it's now your wood shop now.
It's now my wood shop, much to my dad's dismay.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
It doesn't get used anyway.
Yeah, what's the point then?
Okay. Exactly. And so it's just really something that I've gone into, and it's given me a lot of joy.
And it was the way you're making it sound, it was like a happy accident.
It is, because from the scenic, I had actually found something of a lot of sentimental value to me. And I'll go into what it is, and it's got even more sentimental value to me now, because Courtney's actually helped me work on it.
Okay.
I found my grandparents had a table. They were from New York, from mm-hmm. Long Island. So they're up in that northeast area where stuff's really old.
Yeah, stuff's really old and really expensive.
And they had gotten an antique table that was handmade cherry wood.
Yay.
Which is one of my favorite types of lumber.
Oh, yeah.
It's beautiful.
When done properly, it's amazing.
And it's a beautiful about an 8-foot long drop leaf table.
Oh my goodness.
Knew this table would cost like $4,000.
Easy.
the lumber for the top of the table alone would be about 600.
Oh, yeah.
And it had been improperly stored.
Oh.
So I pull it out of the storage, and it's got wood rot on it. And it was just, I almost wanted to cry, but I saw that it wasn't that bad.
Okay.
And in my mind, I'm like, you know what? The table's not worth anything beyond the value I have on it. I'm going to try and fix it.
Yeah, at that point, you would almost like it's almost like you're doing the table a service.
It is.
And the original craftsman who built the table. Mm-hmm.
And I did some research on it. The company that made the table, that sold the table, started in about 1820.
What was the name of the company?
Something Fox.
Something Fox.
I don't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
This goes back a few months.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm going about it, and I'm looking, and I see all the screws on it are flathead screws,
mm-hmm.
which Phillips, which is the plus sign.
Yeah. For those scoring at home who don't know.
Those became used in 90% of applications by 1940. So I'm like, all right, sweet. This table's early 1900s. Then I flip it over to take the legs off. And I notice that there are square bolts holding the legs on.
Those are...
For those scoring at home, hexagonal heads on bolts and nuts became industry standard when they were able to be mass-produced in 1860.
Really?
Yep. So this table has also inadvertently spawned me on this path with woodworking, too. Because it's just so invigorating.
That's the catalyst of it all.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it boils down to. That's my hobby. I spend a lot of my free time doing it.
And money from what we've talked about.
Yeah. Exotic hardwoods can get expensive.
They can. They really can.
Especially because the ones I like.
So, like, that's a really cool, man. Like, 1860s table made out of cherry.
It's
like,
gorgeous.
Oh, man, I got to see that one day.
Yeah. I'll have to take some pictures of it. There's, I actually have a business card that I use for my set design. And the background image on my business card is a shot from that cherry wood table.
Really? That's what you've seen me. I've seen the card.
Yeah.
So that's what that table. Okay.
That's the beautiful thing is when you see it, it's almost like it was designed. It was striped. There's a strip of dark, a strip of light, and a strip of dark.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of working with raw wood.
You can do that stuff.
It just happens naturally.
Yeah.
I literally just put clear coat on it, and that's how it came out.
Oh,
yeah.
It's nice. See, like, I'm good with my hands, I think. I mean, I would like to say that I'm handy. I mean, if you got something that's broken, I could fix it, mm-hmm. usually. My brother was the mechanic for a while, so was my dad. And
I know nothing about cars.
Like, if something's wrong, I can kind of give you an idea just because, you know, the process of deduction.
Courtney's my mechanic.
Wow. If you don't, like, what did I tell you during the break? If you don't marry this woman, I'm gonna kick you in your, you know, in your taint. See, with me, like, I wouldn't say digital. Like, I'm a photographer by trade.
You also work out.
I do. I try to, at least.
That's a hobby.
And that's the thing. Like, I spent, you know, I pay money for a monthly gym membership, mm-hmm. but I also bought a set of weights for when I guess I can't take my son to the gym. Mm-hmm. So when he's here and I'm not with my girl, or she's, you know, she's in the fitness too, like, we work out together in the back room.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So, like, I got a whole landmine set up. If you guys are not familiar with what a landmine setup is, go check it out. Trust me. just trust me. You will work muscles you didn't know that you had. I wake up sore. There's so many different variations. Look up the Buff Dudes. Buff stands for Better Understanding of Food and Fitness. Jim Strapani and what the hell is that other guy's name? The Buff Dudes, Jim Strapani, and I can't think of the other guy. But they all do landmine setups, and they all do great exercise. Just check it out. But
yeah, like, I've taken a peek at the programming. I used to work out extensively too, and I'm glad I didn't do landmine.
It's rough. I mean, you get enough weight on there. It's a rough workout, and you're sore the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty part of doing a landmine workout is you can do full body workouts, and you can do that 3-4 days a week, and you're good. I mean, the hardest part about working out is the food.
Oh yeah,
because you only spend an hour and a half in the gym. You spend 23 hours eating and sleeping. I mean, your body needs enough rest. And just because you're sleeping doesn't mean you're not doing anything. You're mm-hmm. burning calories. You're building muscle.
And I mean, one misconception that people have with working out is, oh, I'm going to do 20 crunches a day and I'm going to have abs.
That, yeah.
Abs are made in a kitchen, not in a gym.
Exactly. I can't count how many like guys who are just shredded who don't work their abs whatsoever because they don't have to. Mm-hmm. They do exercises that involves your core.
Yeah.
Landmines are a great example of that. I mean, a lot of pressing exercises involve the core.
Deadlifts.
Deadlifts, overhead press, the whole shebang, right? So
speaking my language here.
Yeah. But not only do I work out, I'm getting to the point where I'm really starting to get into it. I fell off the wagon a little bit this weekend because of the strawberry festival, but starting tomorrow, I'm getting right back into it. I was off for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm. I've been off for a couple of months.
It's okay. We'll get you back where you need to be.
Well, I had finances. So.
Yeah, I hear you. But also too, I'm a photographer by trade. And here's my thing. I have
you
ADD.
Do good photography too.
I think it's okay.
I like it.
I'm glad that you do.
I've seen a lot of your prints and such, and I really like them.
Like, I got them hanging up here in the house.
Yeah.
I mean, but I really wasn't into photography until, I knew I was going to be a dad.
Mm-hmm.
My mom got me this Fuji camera, and I just went outside one day while my ex-wife was at work. I just started taking pictures, and then I had, Photoshop, and I wasn't really knew how it worked. I just kind of fiddled around with it a little bit. Some came out great. Some came out like crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept taking more and more and more and more. And then I got hired to do weddings and I got hired to take headshots for people. And I do all my own photography, just for fun. I mainly take pictures of my boy. So that's really what I think I have ADD. So instead of using that as a crutch, I'd rather use that to my advantage.
Definitely.
So I have lots of hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
I like to do podcasting, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Photography is another one. Working out. I can find time to do all that
stuff. Well, I think one thing people misconstrue is you have to have only one hobby.
No.
Or you have to stay with your hobby forever.
No, there's nothing wrong with learning how to do something and then, learning how to do something else.
Always, I am a fan of always learning.
Yeah. There's
Being
nothing wrong with keeping your mind going.
In life.
There's nothing wrong with keeping your mind going.
Exactly. That's just me, personally. But I like to learn.
Yeah. Like we were saying on last week's show, Google it. You can YouTube literally anything.
In today's day and age, really, it's effortless to get information.
Exactly. And the thing about doing photography is, well, I don't mean to stop you.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about doing photography is I wasn't really good at using Photoshop, and I had a friend of mine teach me how to use Lightroom, which is another Adobe product. But I wanted my photos to, you can have the most expensive camera on the planet, but if the shot's not there, all the editing in the world is not going to save it.
Yep.
So I have a halfway decent expensive camera, but I also have lots of editing software that I spend a majority of my time doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned how to edit properly. What makes a good photo a great photo? What makes a good photo a bad photo? I learned all that. I had to, because I wanted to be good at what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And just the same way with podcasting, I wanted to learn what makes a good show, sound quality, things I'm going to need that make the show sound like it's supposed to be on the radio, not just a bunch of guys goofing off. And I think that's getting back to the podcasting thing too. I think that's what went wrong with TMO is I kind of blame myself as I kind of took it for granted. We had guests, but we also got kind of taken advantage of, you need to do a 2-hour show.
Yeah.
And, it needs to be an hour long, or you need to promote this band and all this other crap. And because I wanted to keep going and keep doing it, I just said, okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We did a 2-hour show for the longest time, and I can't tell you how exhausting that was. We did it every Wednesday at my house, 2 hours. I just went straight from the hip.
That's kind of what this one is too, though.
But I prepare,
I mean,
stuff.
We obviously have spark notes.
We have guidelines that we're going to go by, but it wasn't Dan, you were part of TMO. We never prepared for anything. You did. When you did news and stuff, you prepared for that.
Yeah.
None of the other guys, everybody came in and just kind of took it for granted. And I think that was portrayed through the show. I think people could hear that. I think people now can hear us that know that we prepare for this.
Yeah, I'd like to think so.
I would hope so. I think they can. I would like to be able to know that they can hear our work, what we've done in the background. You know what I'm saying? Without having to ask us telling them. I think they would get that this show's a little bit more polished than the old one was. Because we never really used to edit anything, especially in the early days of TMO. We never edited anything. I would literally just do a commercial or do the intro music and just put it right in front.
Mm-hmm. And like that was it. Like, and then basically you just boil it down to an MP3, upload it, and we were good. We used to put the shows on YouTube too, which was a nightmare.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And you have to make it into a movie, and then you got to upload it. It was just crazy. It was just a pain in the ass.
I think one problem people might have, I know I have this problem, is with hobbies when you start out, is you're not good.
Oh, no. There's no. See, people think they're going to pick up they're going to pick up something, whether it be a camera or a podcasting mic or, weights, and you think you're going to be lifting heavy, or you think you're going to be taking, Sports Illustrated National Geographic photos. No. Yeah. I have literally tens of thousands of pictures on my computer that are shit.
Well, I just had a laugh because I used to work out extensively as well.
Yes.
I did strongman style training, which was all very heavyweight and very low reps. And I was popped up on my On This Day thing on Facebook that they have. I don't know if you look
share
at them,
share, see your memories.
Yeah, see your memories. And it was a post from a few years ago, right when I was starting to get into working out. And it was a post how excited I was that I could finally squat 200 pounds.
A rep with that, Danny.
Yeah. as a point of reference, when I was forced to stop working out, I was squatting over 300 pounds. It's one of those things you build, you work your way up there. I mean,
that's the great thing about working out too, is like it really humbles you.
Yeah.
Like
any hobby.
I think any hobby will humble you, but I definitely think lifting weights will humble you because you get in there, you get into the gym.
I experience the same thing with my woodworking too.
Yeah. I'm saying any hobby too, but like, just to go off on the fitness rant here, but like when you get into a gym, and you try to put up weight, and you're like, "Oh my gosh, I can't do this." And you're like, and then the first thing is like, these people are watching me be an idiot. Like the first time I tried to push press over 150 pounds, like that was a rough day. Like, and I didn't warm up. Like, I just said, "Oh fuck it, I'm gonna go in there. I'm gonna throw up 135 pounds. Ain't gonna be shit."
Nope.
No, it didn't happen that way. I got about halfway up, like, "Oh crap, I'm gonna break my clavicles because this is coming right back down on my head." So then you learn to start low, like, and just really
work into it.
You build your form. I think and that's anything with any hobby. You build your form. You start really low, really kind of super easy and build your form up. And then you can start getting to the heavier stuff, the more detailed workouts. And even with the amateur photography, you start doing easy stuff, go out in the woods for a little while and take up close pictures or take pictures of flowers or whatever the case. Everybody's done that. The best wedding photographers in the world have started off taking pictures of lilies in their, in their neighbor's yard. I did the same thing. I think I do halfway decent photography.
I like it.
I've had my photography idols, like a guy named Woody Campbell, like go on my Instagram page and look at my stuff and like, wow. And he sent me a direct message like, wow, kid, you got some stuff here.
Nice.
So I'm like, to have that happen, like, and I don't take it as seriously as he does, obviously, because that's his full-time job as a photographer. But to have him say that to me, like, that was a big deal, and I definitely think, like, I didn't start. I know where I came from and know what it is now. And that's, like I said, a hobby really humbles you. It just makes you think, like, oh, maybe I can't. It's very rare to find those people that can just pick up something, regardless of what it is, and just be amazing at
it. And some people can do that.
Some people can.
I have a very good friend. I've known him since middle school, actually. His name's Scott. This kid, I say kid, he's older than me, but he is one of the most talented musicians I have ever known. To give you an idea, my graduating class in high school, the band program, more than half the kids went on with full ride music scholarships to USF. Two went on to Florida State University, which is one of the most prestigious music programs. Good musicians.
That's like Juilliard for the South.
Yeah. This guy, Scott, decided he was a tuba player, and he decided he wanted to be on drumline his senior year, halfway through his junior year, with the auditions at the end of the year.
Yeah, I was going to say they do it the year prior, right?
The end of the year prior. So he starts practicing.
Maybe a drum line.
He got fifth base.
No shit.
In like 6 months of, not even 6 months of practicing. Some people just naturally, inherently have qualities to pick certain things up.
Yeah, I mean, it just happens. I mean, you're not everybody's going to be one of those people, but there are those people out there. And like, don't let it discourage you.
Oh, definitely. That's one of the biggest problems I have is like, I really want to get into furniture making.
Yeah, but Danny, you can't watch a guy who's like Norm Abram from like This Old House, who's literally doing it all his life.
That's my problem, is I look at people like Nakashima, who's the incredible furniture maker, and I'm like, I'll never be able to do that.
I used to watch like the New Yankee Workshop with my dad.
Oh, I'd watch those all the time.
And like there used to be a really cool one called the Woodwright Shop. Did you ever see that?
Oh yeah, it's still on.
Oh, it's still. I didn't know it's still
it's
on.
It's probably new hosts.
I thought the old guy was, but like the Woodwright Shop, what was cool about that is he never used anything electric.
He did everything
by hand. Everything was hand tools. Mm-hmm. And like he didn't have a regular drill. He would drill with a crank. Ooh. I mean, he did, like, the only thing he really used the power tools wise was a saw. Anything else that he could literally do without using electricity, he did.
Well,
and
it came out
fucking fabulous.
A lot of perks to it with a lot of times. You have a lot more control using hand tools. Like, I know a lot of chair makers.
Yeah.
When they're drilling the pocket holes for the spokes for the back of the chair, they still do it with a hand drill because they have more control. Because it doesn't go all the way through and they have. Turn it 7 times to get it to the right depth.
Exactly.
At this degree. It's a lot more control. And that's the problem I have, is I look at the stuff they do and I'm just like,
I'm never going to be able to do that. You're full of, don't do that to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, eventually, Dan, you're going to get to that point. Mm-hmm. It's not going to happen overnight.
It's like one of my favorite quotes that I try to listen to.
You try to listen to it.
I try to listen to it. I have a hard time. Is Edison. I don't remember the exact quote, but it was like his 1,000th attempt at the light bulb.
I know what you're saying. I can remember from the movie National Treasure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind if I say it?
Go ahead.
Okay.
You probably remember it better.
I do. Thomas Edison tried and failed over 2,000 times to invent the carbonized cotton thread that we used to make the light bulb. And when asked about it, he said, "I didn't fail. I found out 2,000 ways how not to make a light bulb."
That's exactly.
I didn't fail. Like you said, he tried and made it. You know, eventually he got it. Tesla's light bulb was better, but obviously Edison was the first guy to do it.
So yeah.
He stole a lot from Edison was really an asshole. Mm-hmm. And Tesla kind of got left out, in my opinion.
Kind of.
Yeah. I think he really got left out in the wind there. So, I'm sorry, Dan. Continue.
Oh, no. I mean, I definitely. It's just a productive hobby, a productive use of your time. I mean, that's really all I can try to say is I do it on my days off that I don't work in my theater. I mean, I still wake up early. I make breakfast and I go and I spend time in my shop because I enjoy it and I get things out of it. If I sit there in front of a TV all day, I'm bored. I spend 4 hours watching TV, and I'm just like, oh, well, yeah, here's another episode of Supernatural. Yeah, I may like the show, but it's just, I get nothing out of it. I mean, I get the temporary joy of watching it, but I can spend 4 hours watching television, or I can spend 4 hours making dovetails in my workshop for a drawer, and I'm getting something out of it. I'm getting experience, I'm getting knowledge, I'm getting to learn. It's so much more that I can pull from it. I mean, I just really want to try and drive that point home of try to get away from the technology.
As much as humanly possible.
Exactly.
I mean, we live in a world now, we live in unique times where you really can't get away from it. Like, you just kind of got to use it to your advantage. So, getting away from technology, I mean, you don't have to use your phone constantly. I mean, wear a watch. I mean, I think I look at my phone more for the time than I do anything else. But, with the podcast, I find myself on the phone, you know, doing Instagram stuff, doing Facebook stuff. It's a necessary evil. I think we've talked about this before.
Oh, yeah, we've talked about it a few times. I'm actually, as you say this, I'm on my phone. I'm trying to find a wonderful quote that I read. That is relevant to it. I have a Sparks Notes version of it, but I'm trying to find it.
Why do you keep saying Sparks Notes? It's Cliff Notes.
There's both.
There is?
Yeah.
I thought it was Cliff Notes.
There's Cliff Notes and
I'm like 8 years
notes.
Older than you are, so I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I had Google.
Google. I still remember playing Oregon Trail when it was green and black.
Dude, I loved Oregon
Trail. It was on a floppy disk. It was two different discs. Oh, man. There's a website you can play it like that, too.
Really?
Yeah, an Amazon Trail. Remember, like it was on Mac only.
Oh yeah,
Those huge-ass computers they had in the computer lab?
Well, I can't find the full quote. It's actually a very long quote. I'm sure our viewers, or viewers,
our listeners
can find it online, but this short sentence that sums it all
up. The synopsis, yeah.
The synopsis is, it's a quote by a man named Herbert A. Simon. And I'm going to tell you the quote, and then I'm going to tell you when he said it.
Okay.
A wealth of information creates a poverty of attention. Meaning, the more readily accessible we have information, the less we care.
Yeah, because we don't take time to earn it.
Exactly, because it pops right up on your phone.
Like, you don't have to go to a book or go to a library or anything like that. You can just write it at your fingertips.
And he wrote that little gem of wisdom in 1971. Talk about prophetic.
Yeah, it's a little bit, right?
Imagine before if you could all see that, before how it all is this stuff. Phones now.
I bet he would be completely just mortified. Mortified, yeah. Absolutely. Especially like that's the zombie apocalypse to me.
Yeah.
Is the constant look at your phone, like when you're at a table with somebody.
Now, I'll admit, there are times where I just veg out on my phone.
Everybody does it.
You got to be able to just get away and do nothing.
Heather and I were at Longhorn, mm-hmm. like probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and we were sitting next to this one couple, and both of them were just staring at their phones the whole time. And she's looking at me like, "You see that?" And I'm like, "Yeah." Like nobody's talking to each other; they're just on their phone. And then like their food came, and they stopped literally halfway through their meal, went back on their phones for their 5 or 10 minutes, and then finished their meal. Then like, I think I even said as they walked past us, I didn't say it obviously to them, but. Mm-hmm. They literally said, I think I said to Heather, like, they didn't say a word the entire time we were here. It was like a good half hour, 40 minutes.
You know? Really fun game you can play, and it'll tell you which friends really care to be able to engage with you, is when you go out to eat with a group of people, propose the game that everyone puts their phones face down in the middle of the table, the first person to reach for their phone
pays the check. Oh, that would be a bad day. That'd be a bad day.
See, with us, it wouldn't happen.
I wouldn't give a shit. Here, take the phone. I'll leave it out in the car.
Exactly. But the point is, I mean, I feel we're at kind of a good point to start wrapping this up.
I think so. I think we're on time.
I think we're right about 35-ish.
Yeah, I think so.
So, the point I really wanted to try to make with this episode is do something good with your time.
Do something worthy of your
time. Do something worthy of your time is an even better way of saying
it. Yeah, do something worthy of your time.
So, continuing with the talking about
quotes
to wrap things up.
Quotes to wrap things up.
I have a quote.
Can I stop you just real quick? I think we should come up with something that we say for the show only. Like the Nerdist podcast that says, enjoy your burrito.
I love that.
I really think it's great. They make each guest say it. I think we should come up with, I mean, obviously not right now, but mm-hmm. I think we should come up with something like that.
Maybe a slogan.
Catherine. A slogan or something like that. I'll think of something.
I might have one we can close out the show with.
I'll pay somebody on Fiverr to do it.
Shout out to Fiverr.com.
Oh, yes. Fiverr. What a great, great thing you are.
So I recently discovered this gem, and I had heard it before. It was in Parks and Recreation. Nick Offerman uses it in his stand-up. Oh, man. But I finally had some time to actually read the quote and reflect on it.
Yeah.
Which I feel is incredibly poignant to do.
Okay.
With quotes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this one comes from the mind of Mr. Theodore Roosevelt.
Great man.
Great. We need a new one.
We need a new Theodore Roosevelt. The guy who
maybe not the racism and misogyny. Got shot and still did
an hour and a half speech. Yeah.
But he was known for breaking up the super PACs.
Oh, yeah. Well, like, you know, the founding fathers never believed in political parties. They called them factions. Mm-hmm.
But so this quote from Theodore Roosevelt, I feel really ties in today's episode very well. And it is, far and away, the best prize that life has to offer is the chance to work hard at work worth doing.
That really sums it up.
I feel
it
does.
Find a hobby that's worth your time. I mean, it's the same mm-hmm. thing.
So, that's going to work towards concluding.
I'm sorry, my allergies have been messing up. So.
Oh, it's terrible right now. I was borderline bedridden with allergies.
Oh, my God, it's so bad. In the last couple of days, too. So I think we're going to go ahead and close the show up for this week. Danny, you got anything you want to add before we go?
I just want to thank everybody for listening in. I mean, we enjoy talking, so hopefully you enjoy listening.
Yeah, we enjoy talking to ourselves. We, you know, we'll talk amongst ourselves. We do hope that you guys are enjoying and getting to, you know, learn some things along the way. If you haven't done so already, please check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/Zen of Gentlemen Podcast. Send us a message if you got any questions about anything or want us to read your email on the show. Well, we can do that too. If you have a question about something, we'll ask your permission, obviously, first, and go from there. Well, maybe we can answer some of your emails and it'll be in a future episode. To get a little sneak peek into what we're going to be coming up with in the show, we got a two-part expose on toxic people. We're going to do one show, basically, how to identify those toxic people in your life and why, not necessarily why they're doing what they're doing, but just who they are. It's general warning signs, I guess, probably the best way to say it. And then, Dan, what are we
going to
do?
We are going to do an episode on how to cut them out of your life.
And that could be, and that's going to be the hardest part of the whole thing.
It really is.
Sometimes those toxic people could be a family member, could be a really close friend, but you got to cut a man loose sometimes. You know?
Yep.
This is how life is. And if they're not benefiting you in some way, I want to say that selfishly, but if they're not supporting you in a good way, then it's always going to be that way. So that's something we got coming up here in the next week's show. So please stay tuned. Like I said, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com.
And drop us comments, messages,
whatever. Hopefully by this time we'll be up on Stitcher Radio. Tune in. Obviously we're on iTunes for people who use Apple and Mac. Download the show, comment, do what you need to do.
Stream it. You got to search for Zen a Gentleman.
Yeah, if you got Wi-Fi at work, you're in a perfect state. I know that for a fact TuneIn doesn't use the same amount. They use basically the same bandwidth as like what Pandora does. It's only like 64 kilobytes per second, which if you're listening to like Slacker and other places, they use like 320.
Ooh.
And so if you're listening to that all day for like 8 hours, you're using 1 gig of data.
Oh.
So that's a lot. TuneIn doesn't do that. Neither does Pandora. You could listen to it for 8 hours a day. You use maybe a quarter of that.
Oh, wow.
So be sure to check us out on TuneIn. Search for us in the search bar. iTunes, simple search bar, same thing. Look for us on Instagram, too. I'll just let it out there. I don't care. My Instagram handle is 9virtues _.
Let me look up mine. Mine's Daniel.McConaughey.
So. Anybody can spell that. But mine's basically 9virtues, and the last part's an underscore. So you can start following us. We'll see. Show pictures of what we do during the day, actually who we are. We really like to get to know our fans a little bit more. Hopefully by this time we're starting to get fans, not just people
on our friends list. Not people on our friends to like us.
Yeah, exactly. Just repeatedly just beating their heads how much we do this show. But all right, guys, well, we're going to sign off for this week, and make sure you tune in next week for the two-part expose on toxic people.
Yeah, we're looking forward to doing that one, so thank you for listening in, and remember, stay classy.
Stay classy. All right, guys, we'll talk to you later.